Hey everyone, Brian from All Day Rockoff here, and today's interview is with Jason Sheely. Jason's completed a handful of GoRock events, and I first heard about him when he started making GoRock parody songs. If you're a member on the Tough Group, then you've probably seen some of the songs that he's produced. And in this interview, we get into why he writes GoRock parody songs, as well as a number of deeper topics, like why people in general do GoRock events, which cadre has the most swagger, and which cadre everyone should do an event with. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I really hope you enjoy this episode. This is the All Day Rockoff Podcast, episode number 117. Thank you so much for the support. Thank you for downloading this episode. I talked to Jason Sheely about the songs that he was making. And one of the things that we talked about before we went into the interview is that the only people who have heard the GoRock parodies, and it really is kind of like the Weird Al of GoRock, are people who are in the GoRock Tough Group. So he put together a mix between some of the songs that he's written, covering topics such as GoRock Selection, VoucherGate, where GoRock made the decision to discontinue vouchers, as well as other topical issues in the Rocking community. So with that said, here is the mix that he put together so you can have an idea of the types of parody songs that Jason makes.
Starts with a heat wave, cadre screams and time delays, and 0-1-1 is not afraid. Shove it in there like a winner, drink water, you're a quitter, 50 seconds to
Jason, thank you so much for putting that together. And here's the interview with Jason Sheely. Today, I'm talking with Jason Sheely. You might know him from the GoRock Tough page, where he's posted a handful or more videos parodying and kind of providing some context in song to the things that we are living in the so-called world of GoRock. So I'm really excited to have Jason on to talk about this. Jason, how are you doing tonight?
Doing pretty good, man. Glad to be on with you.
Thank you again for taking the time. I know you're 3 hours plus on me, and both our kids are now down. And thanks again for just making this work. I appreciate it.
For sure. It's the late hours, right? This is when you get anything done if you're a creative. The kids are in bed and, what, 7 hours before the sun comes up?
Yeah, exactly. That's probably when I get the majority of my work done.
Yeah. If only we weren't strangers to doing things in the dark hours of the night.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it just kind of lends itself to GoRock right there.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, so we're going to be doing this during the active hours? All right.
Yeah. I mean, I imagine there are creative folks who do get it done. Well, clearly there are industries, right? But I mean, if you're a weekend warrior like me, when it comes to music or production or whatever, right, you just got to shove it in wherever you can. And that's almost always between the hours of about 10 p.m. and 2 or 3 a.m. So here you go.
Sounds about right. I know that all too well. So speaking of GoRock, what was your first event? Why did you sign up? And just how'd that whole process go?
For sure. So I was thinking about that. You know, everybody's got their story of like, how did you get into this community or cult or whatever you want to call it? And I was thinking about that. I think the way it worked out for me was I've been reading on the Art of Manliness for a very long time, right? This website that I think many of us know about. And for those of you who aren't aware, it's a site dedicated to sort of a contemporary view of manhood and masculinity, but in the lens of a 21st century context, right? So the site is great. Brett McKay runs it, he and his wife, and he is himself an old school GRT. And you know, early in that process, he talked about an event he did with this crazy company whose name was hard to pronounce and whatever. And I guess, like many others, I read it and I thought, what? That sounds insane. Let's try it, right? So I signed up for my first event, would have been a light event in the fall of 2015, which would have been in Charleston, South Carolina. Now, I live in New England, but I am from South Carolina. So I thought, well, this would be a good reason to go home and like see my family and spend some time doing this crazy thing. So I got my GR1 and I got the like, I'm new to rucking starter pack, which had the source bladder and the reflective bands and the carabiners and all that stuff. But then that summer before the event, I auditioned for a local theater group and was cast in Sweeney Todd and wound up spending 4 months doing a production of Sweeney Todd, which was great and wonderful in its own right, but it trampled right over my plans to do the event. So I wound up not doing it. All of 2016 came and went, and somewhere in the middle of all of that, I said, man, you know, I had this thing that I spent a whole lot of money on this bag. I should go try and do this event, right? So I pulled one of my buddies aside and said, hey, you want to do this? And we sort of batted it back and forth, and we settled down on the GoRev Tough, April 14th, or was it the 15th? That weekend, right? 2017. Cadre Andy Desmond presiding. And that was my first event. It was a Revolutionary War-themed event out of Boston. We did 14 and a half hours, 22 or 3 miles. Pretty light on the PT side of it, which if you've ever had top for a cadre, you know is very unusual. But he had us doing all the usual stuff, bear crawling up Bunker Hill or Breed's Hill, actually. Tons of heavy crap near the end. It's GoRuck 101, right? It's all the stuff you come to expect. And at the end of that event, I said, man, I'm glad I did that. I will never do this again. Which is obviously not true. So I made my way into some, I think I've done 13, 14 events at this point. You know, a couple of Star Course attempts, didn't quite make it. But yeah, it's been a hell of a ride. I'm sort of like anybody else in the community, you find your way. You figure out what you like about it, what you don't like about it. You learn who the characters are. And again, I'm a musician. I come from a theater background. So for me, it's all about, well, who are the players? What roles do they play? Who is this guy Bomber? Why is he a dick? Oh, he's not a dick. That's an act. Oh, it's not an act, but he's still not a dick, right? It's the unraveling of these characters. And just Bomber, I love you. You know that. But the unraveling of all these characters and how they interact with each other and who are the cadre and what are their stories. I mean, God, it was hilarious to me in some ways. And then I went and did a light event that summer in July. And then in August, I did another GoRev event and, you know, made my way into the community. So yeah, that's how I got into it. I'm coming into my third year now. I've done a couple three this year. I've got Snowdrop in a couple of weeks. If you've been looking at the parodies, you know I've been pushing that because I want to see a good turnout. There's a light scavenger. DS is going to be running in Salem, Massachusetts here in October. If I do my job properly, I'll show up in South Carolina for the heavy hitter HTL with Ragnar. Hopefully I'll see some of y'all down there. And then up here in New England, we've got Sandy Hook Light in Connecticut in the early December. So that's, if you want to catch me, that's where I'll be. Yeah, there you go.
So I just have to marvel at the number of events that you have to just kind of clean out the 2019 year when after your first event, you thought, yep, not doing another one of these. So
it's
where,
cult, man. You get to the end and you're like, this is terrible. And you wake up the next day and everything's half off and you're like, well, it wasn't that bad.
Yeah. So how long did it take for that flip the switch and for you to think, you know, maybe I could do another one or 13 of these?
I think I knew pretty immediately I wanted to do a light event because I thought, well, okay, the tough is not so scary now that I've done it. Let's do a light event where it's not quite so bad, or at least not as long, right? Could be worse, just not as long. And I'm glad I did it, because the next one that I did wound up being not a particularly aggressive light. It was a fun light. It was hot summer, July 4th in Newport. Good community of people there from around. And so because that was my second event, and it wasn't, this is going to, the purists are going to hate this, but because it wasn't so challenging, it kind of got it into my head like, oh, this is a thing I could do more than once. And then I showed up in New York where for GoRev New York City 2017, a lot of good people at that one, right? Like names that you know in the community were at that event, but I was so new, I didn't know who they were at the time. And, you know, we cranked through that one, and that one was hard, but not ridiculously hard. You know, so that first year was really me trying to figure out what I wanted to do. I want to tell you a story. So I've got a Cleve story. I mean, we all have Cleve stories, but I'll tell you my first one. I have many, but I'll tell you my first one. So in January of 2018, I'm working on event number 6, right? So this is the Martin Luther King Day Tough in Memphis, Tennessee. Now, we've established I live in the Northeast. And the Northeast, you know, we get our fair share of events, but it's very Boston-centric. And Boston's a great town, but you can only do the Freedom Trail so many times you get bored of it. So I said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to fly to the states where there's an interesting thing for that state, right? Like Oklahoma City has the bombing one, right? Like you would want to do that event. You know, remember the Alamo, you want to do that. There's a ton of events like this all around the country. Snowdrop, right, is another good one. And I said, well, hell, Martin Luther King Day, you're either in D.C., Atlanta, Birmingham, or Memphis. Like, those are the towns if you're going to do an MLK event. I said, well, let me go to Memphis. I've been once before. It's a cool town. I'll go again. So I get there, and the day before I arrive, it's like 75 degrees. I'm going, great, man. It's January. I'm in the New England winter. I'm going to get out. It's going to be wonderful. And that night, right, like the night before I show up, an ice storm comes through and puts a 1-inch coat of ice on everything. And it's 30 degrees outside. So I'm standing on the banks of the Mississippi looking across to Arkansas with like a Connecticut snow beating me in the face. And I'm going, I did not come down here for this. I spent all this money on the hotel. I spent all this money on the tickets for the airplane. It's not ideal at all. So we get into the event, right? And Cleve is the cadre. And I'm like, okay, this guy Cleve, right? Cool picture, right? Whatever. And there's 13 of us in the stack. And it's like Marines and active duty guys. There's a bunch of F3 dudes that showed up, a couple of guys that have done some selection work, and me. And I'm like, wow, this is going to be terrible. Let's go. And Cleve did what Cleve is really good at, which is he took measure of the group. He looked around at the environment. Of course, we didn't know this in real time, but looking back on it, this is exactly what he was doing. He saw that none of the terrain was particularly travelable. He says, well, I got to figure out how fast these guys can move light. So he had us do a couple of miles straight out of the gate, see what our movement speed was like, kind of baseline us. The 120-pound sandbags came out. The deck of cards came out. You know, it was brutal and awful, and there were plenty of 8 counts to be had. You know, it was a typical Cleve event, but the point being, that was the first event I ever had where, number 6 of mine, where I had to dig deep and I had to depend on my team. I could go on and on about that story, and, you know, that's going to bore people to death. But the point is, I think every GRT has some event, if they stick with it long enough, right, where they kind of turn the corner to your point where you said, you know, how did I get sucked in and knew that this was something I'd want to keep doing? Probably that event. And I've told Cleve this before. That was the event where I realized without my team, I was not going to finish this event. There's just no way. And because of my team, I finished the event. And I think if you're fortunate enough to be pushed that hard, where you know you can quit and you know you want to quit, but you don't because your team members literally don't let you. There you go. That's your optimum event. That's what you're after. Anything less than that, you're not working hard enough. And anything more than that, you maybe didn't train hard enough, or the cadre maybe isn't reading the group right. Not that I would ever say that that's true, but you know, there's all these variables that play into this. But that event, beautiful. In retrospect, one of the greatest things I've ever done.
That's such a great feeling when you're looking back at it, and it's, you know, just like such a great memory. But while you're there living that, it was probably pretty tough.
All right. So I'll tell one more story from that particular event. So we're in the middle of the deck of cards, right? And Cleve has his Mavic doing his drone thing. And so we're in the middle of this deck of cards, and one of the cards, the movement is a hill climb. Now, as I said before, it's icy, it's snowy, it's not ideal terrain. And I've got on like Brocky C4Ts or something, right? So there's no traction on my boots. And I'm a little bit of a fat ass. So like for me, getting up a hill is hard. I'm not this big. I'm, 6'2", 200 and too many pounds. I got to get up the hill. So we're making our way through this and all the other PT stuff, ruck swings, the 8 counts, all that. I'm struggling through it, but I'm getting through it, right? But we get to the hill climbs and I can't get up it. Like I physically can't get my body up there. And so there's this one guy, his name was Robert. I'll never forget this, Robert. Robert realized early, he's an F3 guy, I think either out of Memphis or like St. Louis in that area. But he saw it early and he was jumped in right behind me. And he said, every time we had to go up that hill, he was right behind me. And he and another GRT, this guy, Jimmy, they would put one hand each on my ass cheeks and shove me up this hill. At one point they had my GR1 in their hand and they were shoving my ass up the hill. I mean, it was embarrassing and also exceptional in terms of teamwork, right? Like the degree to which you trust the people who do this work, that you're doing this work with. And then, we'd get to the top of the hill and of course I'm exhausted, I'm breathing, everybody's ahead of me and I slide my ass down the hill and Robert would run past me and he would post down to where I was gonna land so he could push me back up the hill. He had to work twice as hard to do the same thing I was doing just to ensure I would finish. And so we get to the end of this deck of cards, right? And I am fully aware that I didn't finish this on my own. And so I go to him and I said, look, man, I'm a little bit embarrassed by all this, but I really appreciate you sticking with me. And he said something to me that has stuck with me throughout all of my GoRuck work and outside in the real world where I'm doing what I do. And he said, man, grace is hard enough to give. It's even harder when it's your turn to receive it. So just let me give that to you right now and you can help me later. And I was like, sure thing. And sure enough, there came a point where, him or somebody was hurting and it was my turn and I jumped in and that's how these things go. But it was like the F3 guys, man, they're no joke. They're no joke. Get in on a team of F3 and F and FIA, I think is the women's group. If you can get in with a team of those folks, you're in for a good time. They're good people.
Yeah, they are. Man, there's not many events where you can have a team support you like that. And then, you can support them back and that's how the team succeeds. And I think that's really one of the things that makes GoRuck events special, because you see that happening weekend after weekend at events as people keep completing them. So thank you for sharing that story.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
So that's how you got into GoRuck. And I mean, definitely multiple stories that are awesome on, why you're hooked in here. And I'm glad you are, because you've definitely made some, I don't know how to describe them, phenomenal contributions to the Tough Page.
I appreciate the flattering words. I think of them more as they're total novelties. I mean, I do them, this could sound selfish, but I do them for myself. I do them because they make me giggle. And like, it's basically, I'm a one-man cover band, but I change the words. That's kind of all it is to it. So it's an excuse to play with music production, which I love very much, and an observational point on GoRuck, right? Depending on what it is, I'm either observing something or poking fun at somebody or celebrating something. I take a broad view where the artist's job is to reflect back on his community, or her community, and what I reflect is nothing more than what I see. So if you get a video of me going, damn it, GRTs, it's because y'all screwed up this week and you should probably think hard about that. And I'm not innocent of this, right? I make these mistakes too. But I'm not going to stop calling you out on it if I see it.
So how did you get into making, I guess, what's the word for these? I mean, you kind of call them novelties, but they're covers, they're observational covers. What's the technical term for this?
Well, I think, Weird Al for GoRuck is about right.
That sounds about right.
They're totally parodies. I mean, I'm not gonna like sugarcoat it and fancy it up. It's a total goof, and they, like all parodies, they have a kind of an expiration date, right? Like anything that I do, like the Vouchergate stuff or the Selection tune that did real well last year, any of this stuff, is not gonna age. 20 years from now, people might hear it if they're trolling the whatever archive of Facebook exists at that point, and someone finds it, and they're gonna go, "What the hell is this?" It is what it is, but that's what it's meant to be. It's meant to be a right now kind of thing. And if I needed it to be more permanent than that, then I wouldn't record them in 5 hours and call it done. You know what I mean? Like I would actually put a lot more work into them and try and make them sound better. And, it's not that I don't care. It's that the purpose that they serve is they're memes. I mean, it's their parodies, their memes. They function the same way, the same Tired Wolf meme, but with a different subtitle, right? That's my parody. you're going to get the same kind of observation just in a different pop song. That's all.
And I think the timeliness has, you know, a lot to do with it. And I think that's, like you said, you work on this stuff late at night and you spend 5 hours on it. And that's why you can get it out so quick. And so, you know, something will happen, something will hit my inbox. And then it's like 6 hours later, you have a video up there and a song about it. It's so quick.
Yeah. I mean, they kind of have to be, don't they?
I mean, they don't have to be, but if they want to be relevant and probably to do well, they should be.
Right. Well, I think it depends on what it is, right? So like, when I think about timeliness, I think about, let's take the selection video from last year, right? That one did very, very well. I think if people know me from this part of the community, it would probably be that tune, right? For those who maybe don't know, it's the REM End of the World cover. But instead, I did a summary of 2018 selection. And the joy in that one was, how many references to selection can I shove into one song? How few words can I use to reference something that would make people giggle? And how many giggles can I get out of this process? But I did one the week before, which I thought was brilliant, that nobody responded to, right? It was a cover of The Impossible Dream as a prelude to selection, right? But The Impossible Patch, right? So yeah, not as clever, but it gave me a chance to sing with my opera voice, which I never get to do. And I did some orchestration work. And from a production perspective, it was much more complicated than the other ones I'd done. But that selection tune wouldn't have worked from a timeliness perspective if I had waited a week or two.
If you're putting that out right now.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Vouchergate, for example, was almost too late. That Tom Petty song, the whole Vouchergate thing happened. I was on vacation and wouldn't be back in front of production in my production space for another like week and a half, which sounds like, oh, that's just next week. But no, man, I mean, in Go Ruck World, that's an eternity.
I mean, we've already gone to Vietnam Rucks since Vouchergate.
Right. You know, and here's another one, right? We didn't talk about this yet, but I've gotten the question in the past. People go, well, how do you know what song to use for whatever? And there's no magic to it. It's literally just, it crosses my mind and I go, oh, that would be very funny for this, right? Sometimes it's a lyric that hits me a certain way. Or so like from the timeliness perspective, when the price hike happened last year, right? Everybody lost their friggin' mind over it. I had Green Day playing in my brain and I started writing one that was, do you have the time to listen to me whine about Go Ruck and how the prices went up, right? Like, that's a great starter. There's a parody to be had there, but it missed, right? Like I missed it. I didn't get it produced fast enough. That's okay. You know, not every idea needs to be actualized, but that's the kind of thing, like when I'm walking around, that's the kind of thing that hits my brain and I go, oh, that's going to be great. Or I'll work my way through it and realize that it's not good at all and I won't produce it. So,
yeah, I think we all have that. I think everyone's got a project they've been working on and it's just not turning out. And you're like, man, do I just hammer the way through this or do I just do what needs to be done and just.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if you don't, you know, progress down everything you're thinking about, then you're not going to have the winners. You're not going to have Vouchergate. You're not going to have the selection.
There's a musician that I listen to named Devin Townsend and he is. Obscure is a good word, but he's ostensibly progressive metal, but he's done so much prog metal, but some of it, like he did a project in the late 90s, early 2000s called Strapping Young Lad, which was this big, like angry, spastic metal project, super heavy stuff. But then he did a record called Casualties of Cool just a few, maybe 5 years ago, which is kind of this like Johnny Cash bluegrass space thing. He did a record called Ghost, which is like spa music with flutes and ambient Yanni kind of thing, Enya sounds. I mean, he's super all over the place. But he talks a lot about his coming up on 30 years of music. He talks a lot about the speed with which he has to produce his music. He's got like 30 records and he's, what, not even 50. I mean, he's a young dude relative to his output. And the point he keeps hammering on is exactly that. He's like, you've got to just get through the idea. And even if it's not very good, get through it so it is actualized and you can cut it off and you can put it to the side and you can move into the next phase. And as a result, you know, I've spent the better part of the last year kind of dissecting his discography and really getting to know his material. And there are records where you're like, oh, this is a get through it record. And then you know what comes like two or three albums later and you're like, oh, that's where he was going. He didn't know it at the time. So yeah, I totally agree. I think any creative endeavor or frankly, any endeavor of any kind is that way, right? You're struggling real hard at a tough event, you know, that maybe is only a 9.5 or a 10 hour tough, right? We've had some that have run short. We've all seen those. But then one day you keep training and all of a sudden you're banging out HTLs and you're competing aggressively at a selection level. It's just a matter of sticking with it and getting through the thing that sucks until you get to the other side of it. So yeah, I agree with that.
I talked to Brian Gardner about a week ago. He went from having trouble walking up a hill, keeping up with his daughter, I think about 7 years ago, to he's completed a number of 100-mile races and he does GoWork HTLs as well.
Man.
So it's, you know, one of those things where you start out just so far, like a mile is a huge thing. And now he's 7 years later, you know, just keep banging out. And it's crazy.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's funny, the GoWork thing. I mean, I've done plenty of them enough now to say, yeah, I'm a GRT. I'm in it. I'm in the community and I'm not just the schmuck who puts up the songs. I actually show up to events and get under the sandbags, but I'm not really an athlete. I've never thought of myself as one, you know, I was a marching band nerd. I didn't play sports. So maybe a couple, 3-4 weeks ago, I was doing some baseline work and I ran a mile in 11 minutes. I've never done that. But that in and of itself is very unimpressive to anybody who runs ultras, or hell, anybody who can run a 5K in 20 minutes. Like I can't do that. That's okay. That's my measure. It's not somebody else's measure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And those people who are, you know, banging out 5Ks might not be able to do a tough, or it might be something that's, you know, in their mind too much for them, where for you, you've done a handful of them already.
Sure. First couple of tough lights. Last few events I've done have been tough lights. And I remember the last one I did was 4th of July in Portland, Maine. Mike Rock was the cadre. So I remember during that tough was one of the first times I had ever experienced this, right? Where you get so deep into a thing, your body almost disassociates from your mind and you realize you're in the grind. You're like, oh, this is the grind. I want nothing more than this thing to end. Doesn't matter how. I'm perfectly okay having a cardiac event and falling over and being dead. That's okay, because then the pain stops. But then you realize that feeling never goes away and you just keep moving. That's the grind. When you get to that place, that's growth. Incidentally, doing a light event with Mike Rock after having done a tough with Mike Rock and earning a small amount of his pity, if you can believe it, he'll put you in a gurney and have everybody else carry you. And that's when you write lyrics for the next parody. That's how I did that. This was the Livin' La Vida Loca. The Livin' La Vida GoWork parody was written in that fashion. Shout out to the Portland women. Friggin' awesome group of people up there.
I think we've all experienced that feeling where you're thinking, man, if someone just came out and shot me right now, like that wouldn't be the worst thing.
No.
This is the worst thing. That would not be the worst thing.
Exactly. And that pain doesn't go away. You just get used to it. You learn to allow it to exist. And that is where you transcend and you go, ah, here's progress. Just keep going.
That's a great advice.
Yeah, it's what works for me. Not all of us can be the Stephen DeTomas and the Sam Swensons. And, you know, there's a ton of GRTs in New England that make me wonder if I'm even qualified to put the bag on. They're so talented. They're so strong. And I'm like, man, you guys let me hang out with you. This is great. Thanks.
Yeah, it's always fun talking to Steven.
Let me tell you about the first time I met DeToma. So as many of our listeners, well, your listeners, I say our listeners, like this is my podcast. The listeners will know DeToma has an East Coast boy originally, set up shop and made his name in the West Coast, moved back into the East Coast for something like 9 or 10 months, but did it right before a really aggressive New England winter. Maybe not the smartest thing he ever did. And so during this period of time, this coincides with my entry into GoRuck. So one of the things that is cool about the New England community is it's really kind of tiny, right? So we all get to know each other. So I mentioned my first event was GoRev in Boston. The team weight for the GoRev events is a to scale replica of the crates used in the Boston Tea Party. And for those events, what we do is we load them up with a couple of cases of Yuengling, not Sam Adams. People always say, oh, it's Boston, you Sam Adams. Say, no, Yuengling. Yuengling is the oldest running brewery in America, not Sam Adams. Anyway, you load it up and that's your team weight. And at the end of the event, you have this hot, stale beer and you drink it. And that's awesome. So we did this event in Boston and it was great. And when I knew I was going to be going to New York to do the tough, I linked up with some local GRTs to get one of these crates so I could, you know, use it at the team weight there. It felt like the thing to do. And so that crate sat in my living room after that event for like 6 months or something until I could figure out a way to get it back to its owner. And the owner said, hey, we're going to do a ruck, you know, here in town, meet us and you can hand it off. Right. And so I get there on time because I don't want to be late. And of course, nobody's on time. So I'm hanging around and I'm texting this person like, hey, where are y'all at? And this person, she said to me, well, you know, we're running behind, but look for DeToma. He'll be there. And I went, who the hell is DeToma? Like, who am I looking for? Just don't worry. He'll be there. He's the one with the Gorlick sticker. And I'm like, Gorlick? What are you talking about? Gorlick? I was a babe in the woods, man. I didn't know. And so I get there. And sure enough, this dude pulls up, opens up the hatchback. And there are all these sandbags laid across the back. And I mean, he's rough looking. Like, I do not want to go talk to this guy. He's a little like, I mean, I'm not a small guy. I'm a big dude. I'm not really afraid of people. But I'm like, who is this dude? So I go up to him and, hey, I'm Jason. Hey, I'm Steve. I've got this crate. I'm supposed to give it back to this person. Yeah, you can leave it with me. I was like, cool. And I hung around anyway because I wasn't real sure who I was talking to. And so she gets there and I see her like, oh, okay, good. I'm putting names to faces. This is all good. Shake hands and off we go. My next interaction with Steve DeToma was Plymouth, Massachusetts, 2017. Ask Cadre DS about this event. I bring it up every chance I get because it was a complete and utter shit show. Anybody who was there will tell you it was a mess, absolute mess of an event. Not DS's fault. He did the best he could. We just didn't get our shit together as a team. But Steve was there, and he is the workhorse that everybody, you know, like, talks about. Like, he's just the epitome of what it is to get out there and do the work. Did another event or two with him before he moved back out west. And actually did the Boston Star Course with his brother, Johnny. So like, I've gotten to know that family kind of through this community, and they are hats off, man. They're some of the best people you can meet. So if you can get into an event with a DeToma, go for it. All of them. They're great. They're wonderful people.
His dad does events too.
Yes. Bob is great, man. Bob. So I've had occasion to meet him a few times. I shadowed a light event in Newport, D-Day Newport last year. Did the Tough also with Cleve, and Mike Rock was it there, that one too. And then I shadowed the light in the afternoon, and Bob did that one. I think John did it and, a couple other local people. But yeah, he was an absolute trip to just be near, right? Cause he's got that same DeToma mouth, but he's a really nice guy. So you're like, wow, he's like this grandfatherly looking figure who is like spouting off bullshit. Like it's an art form. I mean, he's a friggin' trip to hang out with. Oh, they're hilarious. They're hilarious, that family. They're never going to talk to me again now. No, they're good people. They're good people. I can't speak highly enough of them. So,
yeah.
You asked me a question earlier. You asked me, maybe this was before we got started. You said, how did you get into the parody thing? So this, I feel like I should probably fill that in. So why did I start doing parodies? So I told the story about Memphis and Cleve. That was my first event with Cleve. After Memphis, my next event was Memorial Day in Washington, D.C. with Sweet Pea, right? The great Cadre Michael Hot Mike. Cadre Rob, I think, and Cadre Cleve. Cleve was there too. Now, I had only done the one event with the guy. I'd barely interacted with him. I'm standing in the ranks. It's dark. And I'm one of like 45 people. So I see Cleve go by and I'm like, cool, I know who that guy is. He's like a known entity. And we're getting all our crap ready. And I hear from 15 feet away, hey, Sheely, it's a lot warmer than it was in Memphis, right? And I was like, crap, you remember me? Shit, I'm fucked. You know, like that whole thing, right? I'm like, no, don't remember who I am. This is no good. And so there was that event. And then the following week he cadrated Newport. So I accidentally did three events in a row with this guy. You know, it was a trip. So to tie this back into the parodies, after Newport, I kind of got my redemption. So I've only ever voluntarily quit one event, and it was the DC event. Just a whole lot of factors played into it, but that event wound up driving me for a year, to do better and to, you know, focus on the things I needed to fix. But the following week in Newport, I did the Tough with him and Mike, Cleve and Mike, and I worked hard and I had my redemption, right? And when it was all said and done, I was like, all right, I'm good with GoRuck for a little while. Who knows what'll be next? And as it turns out, I think that was the last event I did in 2018. I shadowed a couple, but I didn't finish any or do any more. So somewhere in that mix, a GRT whose name is Peter puts up a video on the Tuff page of him playing his acoustic guitar to Bob Seger's Turn the Page. But he had rewritten it to something like, you know, I'm going to find this thing and post it to the Tuff page. And it was in rhythm. And it was very much a parody like what I do. And I thought, that's fucking brilliant. That's brilliant. I could do that. I'm going to go try this. It'll be great. And because I had come off of this wave of Cadre Cleave events, I thought, well, what could I do? And so I started thinking about all the songs that like lend itself to it, right? So I had like Bullet with Butterfly Wings by Smashing Pumpkins, The Cadre's a Vampire, da-na-na-na. And that just seems so stupid to me, just ridiculously stupid. But that's the reason why it works. A parody has to be stupid or it just doesn't work, right? I mean, think about it. Weird Al Yankovic, because I'm fat, you know it, right? That only works because it's stupid. It doesn't work any other way. So that one, you know, all these other things started popping to mind. But then immediately, Cleave's a metalhead, right? And I'd been listening to a lot of Motorhead lately, and Cleave's deck of cards is a thing. And I was like, Ace of Spades. The only card he needs is the Ace of Spades. So I recorded Motorhead's Ace of Spades as an honor to Cleave and a sort of this little tribute thing. I posted it to just the audio file. I think I recorded it in like 2 hours. It sounds like absolute garbage, but it's Motorhead. So, you know, it's garbage. It's okay. It's Motorhead. So I put it up on the Tuff page and it got, you know, a half a dozen to a dozen people who know who I am, they saw it, or maybe the occasional like, oh, this is pretty cool. And then that same weekend, I did, that same weekend was the weekend that Bomber had been out with his mom, because there'd been some things, right? He had to leave town for a little while. And I remember thinking, well, that kind of sucks. Like, wouldn't it be nice for him to come back to the page and have a little bit of goodwill thrown his way? So I also, in the same weekend, recorded Bomber by Motorhead and rewrote that one to be a parody of, like, you know, it's Bomber, we fucking love Bomber, right? Like, it's this homage to the guy. And at the end, I did that, if you remember this one, I did the whole, like, well, Bomber's coming on the phone, he's talking, and he doesn't remember where I don't know when the Kids Rucks are coming out, and no, you're not getting the Star Course Boston, and all this kind of thing, right? And being a Southerner, I could almost pull that off. And that was the moment where I integrated all these little points of contention, right? Like, Bomber doesn't have all the information, but does have some things. It isn't going to give you what you want and just go away. And Boston doesn't get a Star Course, go to New York and, you know, use the Mac V1s that just come out. So, you know, use the Zippo lighter to polish your boots and this whole thing, right? So I was able to throw all these little references in. And, you know, Bomber and Lee talked about it on the page or on the podcast. And it really was like this, like, little small gathering of people like, hey, this is kind of great. And I thought, all right, well, I've got something here. So the next one was Don't Fear the Reaper, but Don't Fear the Cadre, right? And that was a reflection on what is a first event like. But I knew that, you know, you people don't look at anything that doesn't have video, unless it's Brian Lohr's podcast. That you'll listen to. But the rest of you don't look at anything that doesn't have video. And I thought, well, I got to put a video component up, but what am I going to do? So I downloaded OBS and I said, here's my DAW and here's my boring face playing the cowbell, which is the most interesting part of that song. And that's how I got my format, you know? And from there, it was just every time a thing would come up, it would be like, oh, I'm just going to throw that in and come up with some new visual, whatever it's going to be. So that's how I got there. And one thing led to another. And now I have a thing.
The Gorak parody videos, the songs, this was the first time you had done parody work.
Yeah, in any meaningful way. From a recording perspective, you know, I've been recording off and on. I'm coming up on 40 years old, and I have been doing this more or less in my entire adult life. You know, I'm a drummer. I've been a drummer since I was a little boy. I was in drumline. I was a drum captain. I played jazz band, marching band, pep band, concert band. I did it all. I picked up the guitar somewhere in middle school and figured out all of my Lynyrd Skynyrd and my Metallica and my Alice in Chains and, you know, my Beatles and my Doobie Brothers and all these things. And I sort of figured out the instrument that way. And then when I got to college, somebody looked at me and said, hey, man, do you sing? I went, well, yeah, I've sung in the chorus for a while. Hey, sing this. And they put one of the 24 Italian songs and arias in front of me. And they were like, sing it like an opera singer would sing it. And I faked that, whatever that would be. And somebody said, oh, you've got a pretty good voice. You should go sing, like sing, you know? And I thought, all right. So I spent 4 years at university getting a degree in music theory. And my main instrument was voice. I went on a voice scholarship. And I got through all that and I was like, I could go out and try to make a living at all this, but there's no money to be made in this field. So I got in the tech industry instead, and I pay my bills with a day job like most musicians, you know. But the side effect of that is I'm now a fairly competent drummer, a fairly competent guitar player, a marginally competent singer, and I have a multi-track machine. So we should do something with this. It'll be fun.
Isn't that funny how that works?
For sure. I mean, you put a monkey in front of a keyboard, it'll give you Shakespeare, or a parody of Shakespeare, in my case.
I think one of the, you know, main reasons why I was able to get this podcast even off the ground is because I've got a, you know, a job, so I can use that to fund my hobbies.
Oh, totally. Totally. It is embarrassing the amount of money that I have put into gear in here. Like, I look around my room, my space, and I'm like, man, this is like a semester of college for one of my kids. This is bad. I should probably not keep doing this. Now, I have to confess, I've only ever bought 3 GORUCK bags, not from a lack of desire, mostly a lack of money. But my GR1, I have my Rucker. It's a steel Rucker. And if you listen to last week's parody, you know it's a bad motherfucker. And then I bought a Rucker 1.0 a long time ago, which I loaned out to a buddy in F3 so he could get into rucking. And but sandbags and, you know, accoutrement, the shoes, the pants, the shirts, all that stuff. The patches, God, the patches.
Yep.
Not that they'll break you, but...
No, but that's, you know, death of 1,000 cuts.
Yes. Yes, it is. Kind of like microphones.
Yep.
I did, you know, it's funny, after the, again, being a musician, everything kind of centers around the music in one way or another. When I was getting ready for my first event, I'd been listening to the Tool album, Lateralis, or is it Lateralis? I don't know. Ask a Tool fan, they'll tell you something else. But I've been listening to that record a lot, and there is a lyric in the song Parabola, right? The intro and main song. And the lyric is something on the order of, we are eternal. All this pain is an illusion. And that lyrics just seemed exactly like the key to my surviving this 12-ish hour adventure that I'd signed up for. And so the whole time through that event, I just kept that section of the song looping in my brain, right? We are eternal. All this pain is an illusion. And when the event was over, I was so convinced that that was part of my success in keeping my head right. I went out and had a custom patch made with that text on it. So now every event I do, I have that patch strapped onto the back of my ruck. So if you make your way into the Northeast, or if I make my way into your side of the woods and you see that patch, probably it's me. So could be someone else. I mean, it obviously could be anybody, but there you go. That's how you'll know I'm around.
Most likely you, though. Unless someone heard this and then made their own.
Godspeed. Go out and make the money. I'm too lazy to earn. Just don't let Maynard hear about it.
Yeah, right. Getting back into the audio, you uploaded the first file and it was an audio file only. And, yep. You know, it didn't really take off in the sense that the second one might have. So were you a little nervous uploading that second one, or were you just, you know, run the tough page? Let's just do this thing.
What's the worst that's going to happen? Bomber's going to be like, this is stupid, and he's going to take it down. That's fine. I'm fine with it. I mean, you have to be a little bit fearless with these things, right? Like, I'm confident that what I produce, and it was true with the first couple, and it's true right up to today where I've got several of these in pre-production and sort of working their way out. I am never afraid to post them. The worst that will happen is that fewer people hit the like button. My self-worth is not wrapped up in this, right? You can't let it be. And as an artist, I mean, God, I've performed shows with my bands that I've been part of in front of as few as 10 people. When I was in college, I got to sing the national anthem in front of a sitting president. I've run the gamut, you know, in terms of audiences and audience responses and whether or not they're interested in what you're doing and all this kind of thing. So like, I don't want to say I don't care, because I do. Like, I care in terms of, is the community, do they find sort of joy and humor and some levity in the stuff that I'm putting out? But somebody's going to call me out and be like, dude, your guitar tone sucks. I'm like, okay, buy me a JCM 800. Get me an Axe FX 3. Fund me and I will make a better guitar tone for you. In the meantime, what I have is what you get. Thanks for playing. See you later. You know?
100% refund.
Exactly. Oh, so to that end, right? People keep asking, man, what about the album? What about the album? Once and for all, right? Like, I would love to put a collection together and throw it out and say, listen, for $10 from a Bandcamp or a SoundCloud or something like this, for $10 you can buy a collection of all the parodies I've done, and 100% of the proceeds will go to the Green Beret Foundation or Travis Manion or something like that, right? The problem is, even though legally I'm covered in terms of fair use, it is entirely likely that somebody somewhere from some management company will find this and be like, hey, wait a minute, you're using our, you know, copyrighted material to make money and this kind of thing. And I just don't want to fight that battle, like, at all. If I'm fighting that battle and paying a lawyer, I'm not doing events. Not buying a GR2, which is high on the list of things. What I do want to do, and I've struggled with how best to execute this, so, you know, the plan could evolve, but what I am thinking about doing, I have for a long time been writing original material, as any struggling musician will tell you. I've got my own songs, right? And but I'm finally at a point in my career where I feel like, or like in my production skill, where I feel like I can actually pull it off, right? And write and record something original that is listenable and sounds good and is all of the things you want out of a good tune. So what I'm thinking about doing in some way is writing an album of original material that is my own, with my own observations about the world, the things that I find valuable or necessary to comment on. But I would include two songs, one of which the community's already heard. So all the songs I've posted have been parodies except for one, right? You might remember when our buddy Josh Haas, Cadre Rooney, got diagnosed with cancer. And when that diagnosis was announced to the Tuff page, I was coming back from the Southeast visiting family, and we were on the road for a couple of days, and we had been down there for 2 weeks, 3 weeks in some cases, and parts of the family. We had experienced the loss of a family member who had just passed away from a form of stage 4 cancer. The following week, we buried her. And then the week after that, my sister got married. And so these things happened in such a succession. And I, you know, I'm an introvert. I'm not a big tough guy. I've got emotions just like humans, right? And as an artist, you tend to be a little more, these things tend to come out a little more. And so we're driving up the highway, and I've just got this thing looping in my head, and it won't go away. And I'm ruminating on what Cadre Rooney's got to go through, what his family's going to go through, all these things. And when I finished the drive home, I was able to sit down with a guitar, suss out what was in my brain, get the structure in place, and one step leads to another. I eventually write the song Rangers Lead the Way. Well, at least that's what I called it. I mean, it's Rangers Lead the Way, obviously, is a widely used phrase for a lot of things, but that's how I referred to the song. But that project was a lot of fun. It was original. It was an opportunity for me to flex my own creativity in a way that I wanted to artistically. The best part of that, though, was getting Ragnar and Bellman and Cody G to participate, right? To read the Rangers Creed, to recite it out, because they were in the 75th, right? They served in that unit. And I remember when I had the idea to have them do it for that part of the tune, I got in touch with Bomber. I said, hey, man, I got this song I want to do. Try and raise awareness, get the GoFundMe boosted up, right? Help his family, Josh's family. What do you think about this? Who do you know that was in the 75th? Well, who are the Rangers in the Cadre community? And he put me in touch with Ragnar. And that led me to one of the most uncomfortable moments in my entire life, which is when I picked up the phone, dialed a number, expecting Ragnar to answer. And he answered the phone with, this is Phil. And the first thought I had was, your name is Phil? Holy shit, man, you're Ragnar. You're not Phil, you're Ragnar. But you know, he's super cool, right? Like of course they all have real names. Like, we won't talk about Cleves because he would fucking kill me, but let's just say I have a parody ready for that too. Anyway, Ragnar answers the phone, we have a conversation, and it's a good one, right? And I say to him, I want to make sure that I do this right. I want to honor the oath that you guys took when you said you were going to go do this, right? And I'm not military, nobody in my family is. I want to make sure I do this right. So I got his feedback and was able to put together this project with, you know, and it turned out really good as this kind of homage to the fight that the Rangers have to do and the parallels between that and fighting cancer. And you know, I don't want to say the fruitlessness of it, but some cancers you can come back from and some you can't. And, you know, that was a hard fight from the start. Nobody had any delusions about what Josh was going to have to go through. And I'm really thankful that our community did for him and his family what they could. So back to the thought, right? So I have an original album of material I want to write. I want to include that song, and any GRT who buys the album, I'm going to put that money towards Green Beret Foundation or towards the Travis Manion or something like that. The day Josh's death was announced to our community, I wrote a second song, and I haven't recorded it yet because it hits a little close to home for me. But it's there and it's ready. And one of these days I'll get it down. So that album would have both of those songs on it. And it would be my way of giving some of the GORUCK community a little bit of what they've asked for, which is, when can I buy your album? Well, here you go. This is how I can do it, right? It may not be perfect. It may not go the way I want it to, but that's the thinking right now. And if I spend my time and resources wisely between now and the end of the year, I should be able to pull it off. Or maybe into early next year. We'll see. So that's the thought.
That's awesome. I really like that idea. And I mean, I'd definitely buy it wherever you throw it up, for sure.
I have too many ideas and not nearly enough time. Because in addition to this, right, full-time job, full-time father, my son is a Boy Scout, so we camp and we do all these other things with him, right? The other kids are in Cub Scouts. I'm in graduate school. Like, I have a whole lot of other things going on. My band is recording an album, right? So here's the other thing. I don't talk about this on the Tough Page very much, but I sing in a power metal band where I don't write the music. I just sing, right? And we have a full album of material that we are this close to being done with. There's some vocal tracking and some polish work to be done, but it'll come out by the end of the year too. So I have all these things I'm trying to get done. When they'll get done depends entirely on the hand of fate, frankly.
Yeah. I mean, combination, the hand of fate, the kids sleeping through the night so you can really hours between 7 or 8 and 2 a.m.
Yeah, exactly. Well, like, that's how I did the Bomber Hit Pack 1, right? Like, so here's an insight, right? A lot of people ask me, well, how do you think to write them? So here's how it typically goes. I'm sitting at my desk or I'm walking down the road or whatever, and one particular line will occur to me. And that line will be like the seed that grows the rest of the parody. And so we were, you know, everybody's ragging on Bomber about this hit pack. And that is a hilarious piece of community connection for this last month, right? And I thought, well, at some point I got to do a song about it. And I was listening to the radio and Paul Simon's Kodachrome came on. And the line, Mama, don't take my Kodachrome away, immediately sounded like Bomber, please send a hit pack one today. That's just, my brain turned it into that. And once I heard it, I went, oh God, this is real. And then the opening line, when I think back of all the crap I learned in high school, very easily becomes when I think back on all the crap I bought from GORUCK. Once you have those components, the rest is just coloring in the lines. I mean, this song is basically written itself. So I had the lyrics made, right? Like, the lyrics were done. And they were sitting in my inbox and I was like, man, I got to get this done at some point. When am I going to do it? And I got home this past Tuesday night after class, you know, class is over, had a long night, good class on data warehousing. Yay. And I walk in the door at like 10 to 11 and I thought, you know, it's not a very hard song. I bet I can bang it out in an hour or two tops, right? It won't take very long. At 4:30 in the morning, I finished this song and it's questionably mixed at this point, right? The tambourine is too loud. The bass is muddying up. There's some things to be fixed. I was like, nope. We're going to power right through. This one is just a one and done. That's it. So I think I broke my chair in the middle of the thing. I sat forward and it snapped. I mean, it was just the night was a whole like affair, but there's nobody home. It's just me and my wife, you know, the kids are with grandma, visiting. So I just said, you know what, to hell with it. This is what I'm going to do. And as a result, I posted it very early in the morning, got 2 hours of sleep and was useless at work the next day, but I got that parody done on time. When you want to know what I suffer for my art to entertain you people, this is what I do.
I mean, I only have to mix two voices and an intro and some outro music. And that alone is like,
yeah, but I imagine a podcast is its own challenge because you've got talking back and forth and there's, you know, audio sources that you have to line up. It's at least with what I'm doing, I've got discrete audio sources and I can control it. For what you're doing, it's like you're at the mercy of whatever the other person can give you. So that's, hats off to you, sir. That's hard to do.
Without getting too far into it, it's, you know, when the our phone picks up and you can already feel the cell phone quality is just garbage. You're like, oh, this is going to take an extra hour or two.
You know, it's funny, when I did Rangers Lead the Way, right, all three of the Rangers that those three cadre who read for me recited the creed, they all did it into a cell phone. And I was stunned at how good it turned out relative to that. Because I was like, okay, it's going to be on a cell phone. I can do some equalization work. We'll figure it out. But it turned out really pretty friggin' good. Like, that's what Ragnar sounds like if you ever get a chance to hang out with him in person. Because it's funny, I posted that song. And then like a week later, or maybe just a few days later, was down to New York City for the 50 miler, the first year's 50 miler. And he and Mocha were there. And he was like, hey, and I went up to thank him. I was like, you know, thank you for being part of this. And he was like, dude, it turned out great. And I was like, well, thanks. I thought so too. So, yeah, but that's what he sounds like. So, you know, sometimes it works.
Yeah. Thank goodness it works most of the time.
Indeed. Hey, so this is... have we not covered any subjects that you want to cover? Because I have some questions for you.
I mean, I think we hit pretty much everything that I wanted to cover.
I think I would bore people to death if we kept talking about my songs. I have a couple of questions for you, sir.
Let's do it.
Elvis or the Beatles?
Beatles.
Yes. Jimmy Page or Eric Clapton? Don't think too hard.
Clapton.
Oh, boo. Okay, that's okay. Metallica or Megadeth?
Metallica.
Yes. Sting or the Police?
Police.
Okay. What's your favorite Zappa kid name? Dweezil, Moon Unit, Ahmed, or Diva?
Let's go Dweezil.
Dweezil. Dweezil's the best. Who's your favorite Beastie Boy? Ad Rock, MCA, or Mike D? It's okay to not know the difference because I don't know the differences between them either. Okay. This is going to be a little stretch, but we'll see. Do you listen to enough prog to make a judgment call between Yes and King Crimson?
I don't, but I like the name King Crimson better, if that counts for anything.
It totally does, because Yes is a terrible band name, but as it turns out, a pretty great band. So here's what you need to listen to. Listeners, if you don't know who these bands are, for the band King Crimson, go out and listen to their first album, In the Court of the Crimson King. Their opening song, 21st Century Schizoid Man, is mwah! Beautiful, wonderful song. Everything after that gets kind of weird, but that first song is really good. For the band Yes, you will know them, if you know them at all, from one of two songs. Roundabout, which is a song off of, I think, Fragile, or maybe the Yes album, I forget, but like a mid to early 70s Yes. And then the other one you would know is Owner of a Lonely Heart. Right? That's Yes, but that's 80s Yes, which is very different from 70s Yes. So if you're going to listen to Yes at all, you want to listen to Tales of Topographic Oceans, which is this giant 20-minute songs, four songs, 20 minutes each. Close to the Edge is a progressive rock masterpiece, the song and the album. And then Fragile and the Yes album. Those are kind of the ones to hit. If you want to know where prog rock comes from, that's the thing. And then my very last observation, can we agree, and it's okay if we don't, I'll just be right and you can be wrong, can we agree that Ed Sheeran is kind of a dweeb? Like a little bit of a dweeb. Just a little bit. No offense, listeners, but, you know, come on. We can do better than Ed Sheeran. We can do better than this. We can do better. Okay, which leads me into the next round of questions I have for you. And we're not going to waste too much more time on this, but that was the music portion. And now I want to ask you some questions about cadre. Mike Rock. Is it better to give Mike Rock a snack? He loves his snacks. We know this. Do you think it's better to give him a Necco wafer or a chocolate donut?
If I've got a Necco wafer and a chocolate donut in my hand, I'd probably give him the chocolate donut.
Yeah. Yeah. Although I'll tell you, when the Neccos were for like a year, they were out of production. He stocked up on those things. Like, he spent all of Sandy Hook I think it was 2017, spent all of Sandy Hook talking about, man, they ran out of Neccos. What am I going to do?
That could be a pro tip if people have an event coming up with him.
Bring him Necco wafers. He won't turn them down. Mocha Mike, can we agree that having him yell, "I'm up! He sees me, I'm down," is like the greatest Goruck thing ever. Like, Mocha has to yell it at you. Others can, that's fine, but Mocha has to do it, right?
Yeah, there's something special with it when Mocha yells it.
Yeah. I totally agree. There's like two other cadre things to point out, right? So cadre Igor, relatively new to the ranks, but Goruck Nation, he is the nicest badass. You have not done an event yet with him. Go do an event with cadre Igor. He is super, super cool. He's like this grandpa looking figure. And then he makes you regret all of your choices in life that led you to where you are. And then you're like, oh, but it's okay because he's so nice. Bone up on your Lord of the Rings. That's all I'm going to say. It'll pay off. Last one. And this one's easy. Why is Cleve so cool? Why is he so cool, Brian? You've interviewed all the GORUCK greats. You are the David Letterman, the Johnny Carson, the Jay Leno of GORUCK. Why is Cleve so cool?
He just is.
He's got swagger.
He does.
Right?
I remember, so when I interviewed him for the podcast, I talked to him between his drive from an airport when he flew home after running an HTL to his house and then into his house and through his kitchen while he was making food to eat. And I mean, I don't think he had slept since he had started, you know, probably the second event. And it was just such a fun interview. I guess it's swagger.
Swagger, man. That dude is total swagger all the time. Last but not least, my shout out to Bomber. Bomber, you deserve better than us. You deserve better than all of us, including me, except Brian. Brian's pretty great, but the rest of us suck. We do. You deserve better. You deserve better, Bomber. You deserve better than Lee McCarthy. I'm going to call it, man. Come on. It's the Bomber Show. We know that, right? Shots fired. What's up?
Shots fired.
No, Lee's awesome. I can't talk too much shit because that's not fair. He's pretty great.
Bomber's just one of the nicest dudes. I mean, that guy, one of the nicest people I've met and talked to.
Yeah. I haven't had a chance to meet him yet. He said he's going to be at Snowdrop, which I'm looking forward to. I'm going to fly out there for that one in a couple of weeks here. And we're going to try and catch up for beers, you know? But I'm looking forward to meeting him and hanging because, you know, it's funny. One of the things I was thinking about before you and I got on, but like when we scheduled it out last week, was like one of the things I wanted to be sure to say, because I'm a little bit of a bullshitter, but I earnestly and genuinely believe this. Like, why do we do these events? Some of us, many of us, maybe it's the physical challenge, right? I want to be crushed. I want to be pushed to the absolute limit of what my body can do. Okay, cool. I'm not that kind of person. I don't need that. I recognize that as a tool to help me get to where I want to be. But ultimately, what I'm paying for, why I put money down and show up and carry sandbags, is access to the stories these guys can tell. Like, how many people do you know hopped out of a helicopter in Mogadishu the day it all went down? I know one. I know of one. I met him. His name's Igor. He's Cadre Igor, right? Cleve, another example, right? We beat up on him because he's an easy target, but he talks about none of his accomplishments. He talks about none of his awards, none of the stuff that made him like cadre worthy within the GORUCK ranks. He talks about, when he talks about his time in the service, how he didn't lose anybody. He didn't lose anybody. He went into the scary places and shot at the scary people so you and I wouldn't have to, and he didn't lose anybody. Andy Desmond, Cadre Andy Desmond, top, who ran my first event, who is like, you know, you never forget your first, right? He talks like he'll tell stories. The stories he tells are the shit stories. There's like three of them where they go in, they've got their infrared goggles on, and they're looking for the bad guys, and they see these little heat signatures in a room, and they're scattered all around. But they get in there and the stench is overwhelming, and they realize that this room is where the, you know, insurgents have been just dropping their deuces. Like, that's a great story and better told by him, right? Or what's really great is when you meet a guy like Black Dog Chris and you tell him, yeah, I've done events with this guy and that guy. And he says, oh, you've done an event with Andy? Ha! I remember when Andy jumped for the first time. He was a fucking soup sandwich. Like, that's great. That's a great story, man. I want to hear more of that. You know? I love that stuff. That's the part I care about. I care about being in an event and then DS, you know, and it's going to shit and we can't carry this log because it's too heavy. And DS has us dump the log and runs us up to a coffee shop and no word of a lie, grounds our rucks, goes in, we get coffees, we sit down in a coffee shop and we talk about whatever we want. I was like, I could not believe this was happening in the middle of a GORUCK event, but that's what DS wanted for us in that moment, because when he beat our asses later, he knew he had the power to get through it. And then you can talk to him afterwards and say, why'd you do this? He said, well, when I was combat controller, you know, these are the kind of things that I was going through. This mimics what I did, right? That's what I want. I want to know where they've been and what they've done. And to the extent they're willing to talk about it, I want to hear the stories, man. Because these guys are awesome. Every single one of them. They've done amazing things. And my parodies are stupid. But the stories they tell are friggin' priceless, right? I want to hear those stories. Flash came up and visited the Boston crew maybe last year, right? He met us at the Green Dragon, because if you come to Boston, you go to the Green Dragon. And he sat down with us and shot the shit for like 2 hours over beers. I don't remember what we talked about. All I know is I felt like I had known him for a million years. And he is entirely the reason why I'm going to Snowdrop in a month, because I want to see him again. I want access to his stories. And if that's like the one thing, man, people ask me, like, why do you do these parodies? It's, yeah, the parodies are a trip. Yeah, the parodies are you know, to poke fun at the community and remind us all we're humans. And hey, chill out, okay? It's just a production change. It's no big deal. It's just a cost increase, whatever. But ultimately, it's to keep us connected in these little ways so that when these big things happen, when these big opportunities to listen to the stories these men are telling us, and I believe one day the women who come through the cadre ranks, like that's not going to be long. When all of that comes to bear, you can sit down and go, wow, this friggin' American hero has been to the places, done the things, protected me and my family so I wouldn't have to. I want to hear about it. That's why I do Go Ruck.
Thank you so much for listening to the All Day Rock Off podcast. This has been episode number 117. You can catch the show notes at alldayrockoff.com/117. And I really hope that you enjoyed this interview with Jason. I had a lot of fun talking to him. We talked about a lot of different topics that I didn't think that we'd even get into, and it was a really good time. If you want to support the All Day Rock Off podcast, you can always leave a review on either iTunes or our Facebook page. Just search for All Day Rock Off. You can also shop in the online store, alldayrockoff.com/store, or you can support through Patreon, patreon.com/alldayrockoff, and there's a link to that in the show notes. Huge thank you to you for downloading this episode. Again, hope you enjoyed it, and I can't wait to talk to you next week. As always, don't forget, attitude is everything, keep yours positive, and drink hard, rock harder.